This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Michelle Norris. It is the number one killer of teenagers in the U.S. Over 5,000 teens die in car crashes each year. The stories are repeated so often on the news that teen driving deaths begin to seem routine.
Four teenagers were killed, and one was critically injured in a car crash this weekend.
When Helgerson drove through a stop sign while driving drunk, and broadsided the Toyota Corolla.
A Newberry County family is grieving after their 17-year-old daughter was killed in a car accident.
The principal says the memory of the two teens will loom large at the graduation ceremony. In Fayetteville,
reports there from recent tragedies. This is the season of prom, graduation, summer freedom, and as any parent knows, a time of worry about teens driving dangerously. Countless programs are trying to tackle the problem. We begin our segment with NPR's Kathleen Schock. She visited a high school in Rockville, Maryland, to check out a dramatic exercise to prevent drunk driving.
Behind the yellow police tape, a wrecked Jeep Cherokee sits with four teenagers slumped inside. In front of them on the pavement, two more teenagers lie bloody and motionless next to a battered bike.
It looks just like Joe Gorman got hit by the car. And also, someone got really messed up getting knocked off that bike.
Rockville High School student Kyle Lamberg stares at the crash scene. Police and rescue workers arrive to begin cutting the victims out of the car.
One, two, three, go.
I noticed you're hugging each other.
Yeah, it's just really, really emotional.
Taylor Beans and Gina Gonzalez watch tearfully as medics cover their friend's body with a blanket.
Kimmy looks like she's dead.
Kimmy's not really dead. She and the others are acting this crash scene as part of a two-day program designed to scare teens into not driving drunk. It's called Every 15 Minutes, because some years, that's how often an American has died at the hands of a drunk driver. Every 15 minutes throughout the day, an alarm goes off, and an unwelcome visitor heads for one of the classrooms.
And you are?
I'm Death. I have the classic skull face, black robes with the hood.
And a scythe. The Grim Reaper opens the classroom door.
Elizabeth Rojas, your time has come.
Somberly, the girl gets up and leaves. Policeman Andy Crawford steps in and reads her obituary.
Elizabeth Rojas, at the age of 16 years old, died in a tragic alcohol-involved car accident. She leaves behind her loving parents who always motivated.
Rockville High School has joined hundreds of high schools across the country taking part in the program. The pretend crash victims learn what would happen in a real crash. The dead head for the morgue. The injured are taken to the hospital. And the drunk driver is pushed into a police car and taken to jail.
It was lonely. I was afraid. I was scared. Because the whole thing was real. Like, the cops came. I got put in handcuffs. I did all those tests they do.
Richard Grant was the drunk driver. He doubts this program will stop the kids at his school from drinking. But Grant says one thing will change for him.
I've always gotten to cars after a party or something, and that's not going to happen anymore.
For Richard Grant, this program seems to work. But what about teens nationwide? The only academic study to examine this question was conducted by University of California professor Judy Borden. She surveyed students before they took part in the Every 15 Minutes program. Many admitted drinking and driving. Afterwards, she asked them again.
Most of the students said, "You got to be kidding. After what I just saw a month ago, there is no way I'm going to drink and drive." That's pretty exciting to those of us who do research with teenagers and changing behavior.
Borden says more studies are needed to see if teens who promise to stop drinking and driving actually do. Kathleen Schock, NPR News.
Now, from reenactment to reality, just about every teen has heard the admonishment, don't drink and drive. But alcohol is not always a factor. Only about a quarter of high school-age drivers who died in car crashes had a blood alcohol level at or above the legal limit. For most teens, accidents are caused by inexperience. Ted Paxton is the sheriff of Forsyth County, Georgia. That's a suburban area outside Atlanta, a place where a driver's license can be a ticket to freedom and danger. Sheriff Paxton says he's seen too many crash scenes.
Just minutes before, we had a very vital, living person that had a future ahead of him, and that's over with now. You know, I've been in this business for 35 years, and every one of them just tears your heart out, because more often than not, it is a senseless act. An impaired driver is not necessarily one who is under the influence of any particular type of alcohol or drug substance. Being impaired can be caused by distractions. Too many passengers in the car, paying attention to what radio station or CD we're listening to, talking on a cell phone. There's so many other things that go on which would cause the driver's attention to be distracted and have them somewhat impaired.
Sheriff, there was a period in 2005 when Forsyth went through a spate of teenage driving tragedies. Could you quickly tell us what happened in that period?
Michelle, in a short 3-week period, we had 6 teens that lost their lives in vehicle accidents in Forsyth County. And it started out late one night with a young teen driver. Actually, he wasn't even licensed. He'd snuck the car out, 15 years old, going too fast, lost control, left the roadway, and struck a utility pole. About a week later, this actually was the end of the school year. We had a vehicle that had 4 teens in it. They had been to a party. Driver lost control of the vehicle, struck a large utility pole. Oh, that was maybe a Tuesday, Saturday, another incident. 2 young boys in a car, driver loses control, passenger loses his life, and within 3 days after that, 2 young girls. That particular one, best we can figure out, there was a distraction in that one, which was nothing more than the driver talking on a cell phone.
This is a problem all over the country, and, sir, you've had, unfortunately, have had quite a bit of experience with this. As you look for ideas, what actually works? Late-night checkpoints, pulling over every 10th teenager, even though some might say that's profiling? What actually works?
Well, we certainly do a tremendous number of the safety road checks, and I will be very candid with you. During 2005, we had directed our attention, so to speak, in those areas around the county where we knew that there were teenage activity, parking lots of shopping centers and things like that. And so certainly from the teenager's point of view, what does it look like? We're picking on them, right? No, we're not picking on them. We're just trying to keep them alive. And that's what our goal is.
The federal government is looking into this problem. Researchers around the country are looking into this issue. If you got a call from any one of these organizations that are trying to work on this and they said, what's the one single thing that we should try to do, what would be that one thing?
Wow. I don't know if there's actually one thing you can actually put your finger on, because it takes so many things. But one of the most critical things is parents being involved. Parents sometimes want to be their teenager's friend. They've got plenty of friends. They need parents. You're the only set of parents they're ever going to have. And you need to set those parameters, have that dialogue with them. And also, a child is going to emulate their parents. And so you need to exhibit good driving behaviors, because always remember who's sitting in the back seat watching mom.
Sheriff Paxton, thank you very much for taking time to talk to us.
My pleasure. Thank you, Michelle.
That was Ted Paxton. He's the sheriff of Forsyth County, Georgia. Joining me now is Rob Foss. He directs the Center for the Study of Young Drivers. That's based at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Mr. Foss, thanks for being with us.
Hi, thank you. Glad to be here.
Now, you just heard the sheriff saying that parental involvement is key. What kinds of specific parental involvement can be most effective here?
My response is the same as the sheriff's. Wow. There is so little research available on this general issue that we have very little to go on. The one general principle I think we can spell out is we need to protect teens by keeping them out of risky situations.
No doubt parents are listening to this conversation, probably preparing to hand over the keys to a teenager at some point. If parents can make a difference, what specifically can they do?
Okay, first thing, don't hand over the keys to them. As a teen begins driving, you want them to get as much practical experience as they possibly can under the safest possible conditions. That means mom or dad sitting there in the passenger seat while the teen drives anywhere and everywhere. It's certainly safer if a teen does not have exclusive use of a car. Share the family car. That keeps the parents and the teen actively engaged with one another. It also reduces the amount of driving that a teen does, which is a guaranteed way of reducing their crash risk.
During that period of time where parents are in the passenger seat with a young driver, just learning the rules of the road, are there certain things that parents should or shouldn't do to help give the teenager the confidence and the knowledge to drive safely?
Well, we know a few things which simply come out of evidence about what is effective parenting. And, of course, one thing you don't want to do is yell at them. You don't want to overload them trying to talk to them constantly about what they should be doing, what they should be seeing, what they should be not doing. Beginning to drive involves a huge cognitive workload that nobody can take on quickly. In the same way that you wouldn't take your six-year-old out and shove them in a lake and say, I hope you can swim. You know, it's a process of moving them along slowly while you're there to protect them.
So why is this so difficult? Why is it such a tough problem to solve?
Well, you know, human behavior is stunningly complex. And even though there are lots of common sense ideas, what I refer to as common sense nonsense, many of these have no hope alone of altering human behavior very much.
Rob Voss, thanks for talking to us.
Thank you for having me.
That was Rob Voss, director of the Center for the Study of Young Drivers at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Most states have introduced stricter license laws for teens in recent years. To find out about the laws in your state, visit our website, npr.org.